Good morning. Wow, that's loud. Good morning. That's probably a problem. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. The time is 9:02 a.m. We're meeting in the Capitol Room, number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Stevens, Senator Machicki, Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Holland. And we have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. We have three items on today's agenda. We will begin by bringing Senate Bill 32 back in front of the committee. And Senator Stevens, do you have any further remarks or invited testimony on this bill?
Just a couple of very brief comments, Mr. Chairman. I think this is an issue we've dealt with and talked about a lot, and I hope folks understand what it does. It really simply is a dual credit system, partnership between the school districts and colleges. It'll be a great aid, I think, to school districts, but also to the University of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Are there any questions from the committee before we get started on this? Seeing none, we'll now open it to public testimony. I see, was there anyone in the room wishing to testify in person? I see no one. And it appears online. We have Chris Reitan, with the Craig City School District. Chris, if you can hear me, please state your name and begin your comments.
Yes, good morning. For the record, this is Chris Reitan. I'm the superintendent with Craig City School District, and I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 32. First, I want to state that I really appreciate the intent of the bill to increase access to high school students to our Alaska University of Alaska system. It allows families greater educational choice and options, and provides a way for students who might not consider the University of Alaska as an option. It allows them to gain some access there to see how they might want to pursue that possibility upon graduation from high school. I also think it's a great tool for all school districts in a way to provide more choice and options for families to develop a really strong individualized student learning plan for each student we serve, so that we can have a balanced approach between what we offer in the school districts as well as what our University of Alaska system offers. The only concern I have about the bill is on page 3, section E, which states an agreement entered into by a school district and the University of Alaska under B of the section must outline the manner in which costs associated with the program will be shared between the participating school district and the University of Alaska. Without more specificity in that section, I'm just concerned, you know, especially given our current economic climate, the pandemic, the additional costs that are being bared by school districts, that this might have an appearance of an unfunded mandate and cause additional economic responsibilities by school districts without additional funding. Beyond that, you know, if there could be more specificity there and how the costs would be shared, that would be appreciated. But I do want to state I appreciate the intent of the bill. I think it spells out a really nice path for more students to access the high-quality programs at the University of Alaska system. With that, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Superintendent Reitan. Are there any questions while we have them online? No. Next would be Norm Wooten in Juneau, the Association of Alaska School Boards. Mr. Wooten, if you can hear me, please state your name and affiliation and begin your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Am I coming in okay?
You're loud and clear.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Education Committee, my name is Norm Wooten. I am the Director of Advocacy for the Association of Alaska School Boards. Many years ago, while serving as a local school board member, my district created a dual credit program with the local branch of the University of Alaska Anchorage. This was groundbreaking as it was largely unheard of, and the district had to overcome many biases from both college and high school teachers. However, both the high school and the college personnel persevered, and it worked well for both institutions, but especially for students. My own daughters benefited from the dual credit courses and received a jump start on their college degrees. And incidentally, I saved considerable money because of that. I relate this story to illustrate my support for programs such as this. However, Section 2 of SB 32 seems to require that all districts with eligible students must participate in the middle college program. My association is a strong proponent of local control, and I represent their interest. We certainly agree with making this opportunity available to districts and that there be a protocol in place to allow districts to participate for the benefit of their students. There are provisions in SB 32 that are appropriate and much appreciated, things such as ensuring the readiness of students for college-level work, cost-sharing opportunities between the university and the local district, maintaining college-level rigor for courses, and the hold harmless provision for ADM. However, I would encourage you to respect the long-held belief in Alaska of local control in education and the determination of appropriate manner of education be left to local school districts governed by locally elected school boards. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Wooten. And so we'll take this opportunity, Dr. Bishop or Dr. Lehr or Senator Stevens, did anyone want to address the concerns raised? Maybe a question from Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of clarification to the sponsor. As I understood it from testimony the other day when we were listening to this bill the first time, an agreement has to be entered into by the school district. So if they didn't want to enter into it, even though there's a must clause, the agreement would say, we're not going to do it. That would be the agreement. That's what I understood in testimony. So it isn't imposing a mandate on what I'm hearing is that it's imposing that mandate. That mandate has to be a mutual agreement between the two. And as I understand it, in the Mat-Su borough where there is an existing program, those costs are generally borne as a combination between the ADM and the university itself, waiving fees. And so while I recognize the concern that's been expressed by Superintendent Raitan and by my good friend Norm Wooten, I think it may be creating much ado about fairly little. I think that the bill, because of the way the agreement is written in the bill, and that was a discussion last year when we had this bill, that it now addresses it by making it a mutual agreement. I believe I even offered an amendment to that effect last year. So I think that there may be a misunderstanding. I'd be curious to hear from either the sponsor or from staff as to whether or not I'm hearing that correctly.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Begich, for those comments. You know that we certainly in this bill want to respect local school districts, and they have every right to entered an agreement or not entered an agreement. So in the end, it's always in their control. This is an opportunity that's available to them. If they choose not to take advantage of it, they don't have to. Nothing in this bill, I believe, would require anybody to enter a program they don't wish to. And with the staff, I'd ask Tim Lampkin to come forward, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, he might be able to address that.
Mr. Lampkin, state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I appreciate this conversation. It's a conversation we've had for many, many years now. This bill is not intended to be prescriptive nor micromanagement. It's intended to set up a framework and that there shall be an agreement between university and respective school districts, and that agreement could simply be that there won't be middle college in that particular district. So what I'm hearing here is correct with the intent and the wording of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. Senator Hughes?
And on the same topic, I just want to make sure that this isn't going to be a problem, because on page 3, section 2D, at the top of page line 2, it says, every school district shall provide information about the program to students and parents of students. So now we're saying the mutual agreement would be that the district isn't interested in providing it, but now we're also telling districts they have to provide information about the middle school program. So how are those going to work together?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, again, much of the onus of these programs is on the university, and the university would provide information to districts that programs that middle college opportunities are available to districts, and that information is not only to be shared, you know, be known by districts, but also to be known by parents, such that locally those parents can negotiate with their school districts to say, hey, we want a middle college here, and work accordingly to develop one in their respective school district.
Follow-up from Senator
Hughes. And I'm going to play the devil's advocate, because if the district feels that they can't do it, it's going to be cost prohibitive, maybe in a small school where they need that student's ADM in order to keep the regular high school teachers, for instance. And so the district doesn't want to have agreement. They want their agreement to be, we're not going to offer it this year. But then they're still provided to, they're still instructed to tell the parents that there's a middle school program out there. And the parents come and they say, we want our child to be in it, but there's no such agreement. I'm just wondering, is there any way for that student to work directly with the university? Well, no, because the district would be paying for it. I just don't know. I just think there's a little problem with this being congruent with the part that it would be optional for a district. And I'm just, I think that maybe that shell should be may if we're going to give the districts the option.
I will add on page 2, line 21 or 20, the university will make the program available to school districts in the state. And I think that when they say shall, it's more that follows under shall make available, will make available. If it's being made available, I don't think you can may provide information. If it's being made available, you probably must provide information. And I think that's where maybe that can be clarified a little bit, but I think section B is the option for the district to enter the program or not, and section D is if they're in the program, they have to provide information on it. Senator Machicki?
I don't know that that's how I read it. So the only concerns, I actually support the bill very much. I think it's a really important program, but the way that it reads right now is that you have to enter in an agreement, and if you look at line 22 on page 2, it doesn't say the agreement can be that the district is not going to participate. It says an agreement under this subsection must allow any student under C of this section to participate in the program. And then when you look on page 3, that line 2, it doesn't say every school district agreeing to enter into providing middle college services shall provide information about the program. It essentially requires every school district. So I don't read it as voluntary. I don't see that you can have an agreement that you're not going to provide services because of that line on page 2, lines 22 through 24, where the eligibility requirements come up. I support the program. I do think it should be voluntary for districts that may or may not be able to support the program, and that's my only concern. And I've heard that from several districts around the state. I'm just wondering, do we have an opportunity to clarify for those districts that simply don't feel like they can afford the program?
I'll just state, I still see the university shall make the program available, and the districts then they'd enter an agreement, and then any agreement under the subsection must allow any student eligible. I think that still the agreement has to be made with the university, but I will leave it up to the bill's sponsor to decide if this needs to be reworked. Any more comment on this point? Seeing none, we can move on to Scott McManus. Mr. McManus from Toke, are you out there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, good morning.
If you'd like to, we hear you loud and clear. If you'd like to state your name and begin your comments.
Very good. My name is Scott McManus, and I'm the superintendent for Alaska Gateway School District. And I appreciate the conversation that just took place. My reading of the bill confirms the mandate that, I mean, at least the way I understand it, it seems to me that it is a mandate and that there isn't, you know, when you say shall, to me that means that we shall. As a concept, I'm very much in favor of what SB 32 does for many students, and I think there are a lot of, but I think that in this case there are some important mechanics of the statute that are going to have unintended consequences for small rural school districts like ours. I have several small schools that are one and two teacher schools, and the savings that might be incurred in a larger district by reducing staff were not options that are available to me just because of the scale. I think that with some small changes, this could be a really good bill, and it is something that I've promoted in my own district for 20 plus years. And we've had a number of graduates in our district, high school graduates, who received their AA degrees the day before or shortly before they received their high school diplomas, because we worked with the parents, we worked with the students, we supported those students with tutoring, with internet access, with expertise, so that we made sure they didn't fall on their face. We provided them with financial support, and really, I think, developed a great program that is in place today, and that we are good partners with our local university here. We send many, many students through the university system here to get one or two classes or to get their whole certifications or to get their degrees. It's hard for me to speak against this bill because I do know that Senators Michici and Senator Stevens are big supporters of public education, and they're people that I admire, and I know they have the best intent. But I just, the way it's written right now, I believe that it could end up hurting the district and hurting some students who are maybe not, because we're required to let them do it. You know, we have good counseling systems right now in place for our students that we use with the parents. We have a large number of families that are not don't have college in their background. We're trying to change that, but it takes time and it takes process and it takes trust between the schools and the families. One of the argument about saving the district's money, it may save some districts money, but it's not going to save my district money. In fact, 30 credits of undergraduate tuition right now is going to cost three times the allocation that we provide to our correspondence students. We provide $2,400 right now, and we really believe that they spend that money on college, and sometimes we supplement that. But if every family in our district did that, I would have to close down our correspondence program. We could not support it. The mandate to enter into an agreement, I know there's some nuance in there about, you know, forcing a school district to agree to something, but that is what the bill seems to say. And I'm a fan of our school, of our university system as well. I'm a product of it. My father and mother are both alums. I'm an alum. I donate every year to it. I believe in it. I think it's one of the biggest economic engines in the state. And I want to figure out ways to support them and to support our students. But in the end, I just can't support the bill the way it's written.
Thank you, Superintendent McManus. A comment from Senator Hughes.
Yes, and I just want to go on the record. I love this concept. It's been highly successful in MATSU, but I also understand the smaller districts and how the cost may factor in. And I know Senator Michici was referring to on page 2 that section, but now I'm reading it, and maybe he made this point and I missed it, but it says an agreement under this subsection must allow any student eligible blah, 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 to participate in the program. So even if you had an agreement, and the agreement was, which is kind of a strange agreement, we shall not enter into an agreement, even if you had and the scenario that I painted where that you had an eligible student where they wanted to, but the school district wasn't entering the agreement, now this is saying the student must be able to participate. So I think we do, as much as I love the bill, I feel like we probably need to work and get this language so it's workable, and I don't know if the sponsor has thoughts on that, because, and I would actually love it if there was some way, if a district so small and it's hard for them to manage, that a student could still do this, and but I know that you'd have to have a way to pay for it, so that's maybe beyond this bill at this point.
And Senator Stevens, do you want to comment to that at all?
Oh, certainly. I'll just say that, you know, the focus of this bill is on the student. It truly is. And what's good for the student and how we can help the student, how we can help them get credit when they're in high school. You know, we've been talking about this a long time, and it never has it been our intention to harm any school district, to harm anybody that doesn't want to participate. So I'm surprised this all comes up now. We've been talking about this, as I said, for many, many meetings, and it appeared to be there's quite an organization to put a stake through the heart of this bill. It would be a mistake, I believe. So that's all I'll say for this point. I'm anxious to hear other comments and before
Senator,
I move on.
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to share the view of the sponsor in that regard. And, you know, when we hear people who are suggesting that a bill doesn't work, I want to hear the suggestions for to repair it. And this happens with bill after bill after bill. People will say that they oppose a bill or oppose a thing, and then they don't offer a solution. So I'm going to offer a solution that I think addresses everything I heard today, even the comments that Senator Hughes that you just mentioned. And simply on line 24, and again, we're not supposed to do this on the fly, but on line 24, if those disagreements are sincere, you would simply replace the period with a comma and say, unless a district elects not to participate, period. That clears up any issue of participation. It still provides the opportunity for the student. It would still maintain the requirement for the university to let every district know about the program. And it would resolve the issue of that we've heard today from three of our testifiers, all three of whom I respect and work with on a regular basis. If the issue is not to mandate, then simply saying the words, unless a district elects not to participate, clarifies the issue of whether or not there is or isn't an agreement. The issue of the agreement becomes the negotiation between the district and the university, which is the intent of the bill. So I think that that resolves the issue, and it can be done quickly, rapidly, without slowing down the movement or passage of this bill. So if it's the will of the chair, I'd be happy to offer that as an amendment, conceptual amendment, which then could be cleaned up by Leg Legal. But if it's not, I'm not going to offer that amendment. So
I think we do have an opportunity. We have at least two more public testimony individuals. I've jotted those notes down. I'm sorry, Mr. Lampkin. I'm looking around. I'm not looking at you. Mr. Lampkin, please speak.
I can only request a brief at ease.
Say again?
Brief at ease.
On the record, sorry for that delay. We do have at least two more public testimony individuals, and I believe a lot of people are tuned in and probably looking forward to contributing. Superintendent for the Aleutian East School District, Patrick Meyer. If you'd please state your name and affiliation and begin your comments.
Yes, thank you. My name is Patrick Meyer. I'm the superintendent of the Aleutian East School District, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide my testimony this morning on behalf of our district. I would like to thank Senator Stevens and the committee for spotlighting the concept of the middle college. You know, I believe we are all in support of increased opportunities for students in our schools as they exit our K-12 system into their future pursuances of educational or vocational tracks. In the Aleutians Eastboro School District, we provide opportunities regularly through UAA for our students to take part in college classes within our capability to do so. The capacity to provide online content is limited in many rural areas in Alaska, and you know, this is definitely true in the Aleutians. So to make this a mandatory, component of our system would be really, really difficult because we just don't have the bandwidth to be able to support such a program currently. It's also a financial challenge for the district and other districts. You know, we haven't been able to receive an adjustment in the BSA for, I think it's 7 years. And so this would just further erode that capacity for us to be able to provide existing programs. And the middle school concept, the middle college concept really, again, shouldn't be mandatory but voluntary. You know, my colleagues in larger districts and other districts that have participated in middle school college concept, they've done so voluntarily, and it's worked. And so we have keenly watched that and increased our opportunities for students to take college classes, again, with our capability to do so. And smaller districts, and this is important concept to understand, we would have difficulty in downsizing to accommodate this change. So it's really a matter of scale. So if even if we had the bandwidth, if we had to remove students from currently offered course sections, you know, provide, let's, for example, a paraprofessional to work within, you know, the delivery of a distance model, it would be challenging for us to do that. This is not so much an issue in larger districts because it's a matter of scale. There are many, many people in schools in larger districts in the state that are in schools, and so it wouldn't be as difficult a shift or adjustment for them to make. I would just like to ask the committee to consider advancing this with an opt-out or an opt-in provision. If that were to be a possibility, I know that was addressed this morning by Senator Begich. I listened keenly to that discussion, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify. And again, I applaud the opportunities for students. Just we need to be able to provide them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent Meyer, Mayor. And we also have Lisa Parity, Dr. Lisa Parity with the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Dr. Parity, if you'd like to begin your comments.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Lisa Parity, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear.
Mr. Holland, thank you. First, I'd like to say thank you to Senator Stevens and note that I have nothing but the utmost respect for him. Senator Stevens is commonly acknowledged as a champion for all students and public education. So we do greatly appreciate seeing this bill again and appreciate the bill sponsors. I think you've heard from my colleague Norm Wooten and several of our members. And I think I have prepared testimony, but I guess I would just note that we do support this concept of providing all high school students the opportunity to enroll in college courses. These courses can provide a unique educational experience and increase academic challenges for eligible students. But as you've heard, there is potentially added expense for some school districts, and maybe we need to just provide more clarity around the agreement between the university and the district, a may versus a shall, as Senator Begich recommended, would be an excellent clarification. As I said, our members support choice and this kind of increased opportunity for all students, and we support SB 32 with the exception of it being required of all districts. Perhaps make it voluntary, or I appreciate Senator Begich saying bring solutions. I think it's working so incredibly well in the districts who have chosen to go this direction. And we want to make it operate the same for other districts. So perhaps, as Senator Machicki, Senator Hughes, and Senator Begich suggested, we do a shall to may, or we, the last time we talked about this bill, we talked about flipping this, that the university waived these costs, somehow making them cost neutral, maybe amending the bill to include full funding for districts who wish to participate in the last middle college program. And I think maybe just some additional work around how do we make this work for all districts who are not situated similarly, because it's a great program and we support these increased opportunities being available for all students. And the districts where it's been done organically, like the Anchor School District, like the MATSU and Kodiak and Fairbanks, it's hugely successful and it is serving those students. And they're doing an amazing job, and we want to offer those same kind of opportunities to all districts, but do it in a way that, you know, can make it cost neutral for them as well. And I just want to quickly give an example because say you have six kids, and I'll just pull a small, like in CHEVAC, who want to enroll in a middle college through this kind of bill. CHEVAC would not be able to adjust down their personnel to meet the new tuition expense to make it cost neutral. In fact, they would likely need to hire an aide to work with the students as they work online, and that's assuming they have the kind of bandwidth or connectivity required to do that. So I'll note that that also remains something that collectively we all have to keep chipping away at. But a three-credit lower division class costs $700 plus. So if you had six kids in CHEVAC taking the one class, you'd be around you know, just over $4,000. And you probably need to add the cost of an aide to supervise. So I don't know how many classes the students would take per semester. So maybe you take two or, you know, we don't know those things. So while the cost to CHEVAC is, it's not enormous for the six kids, it is real. It's certainly not cost neutral. So I think that's what I'm hearing from members is total support for this concept and this bill, but find a way maybe to rework it such that it is, as perhaps Senator Begich recommended or President Michicki, an opt-in or not required. So thank you for your time and your consideration. And again, thank you to Senator Stevens for his always dedicated focus to what's in our best interest of students and school districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Parity. A comment from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to be clear. I did not suggest that the word shall be replaced with the word may, and I want to be clear about that. What I suggested was that the intent, which was on the record here, be clarified, and that clarification was that an agreement could mean that they don't enter into an agreement, and that's all that I'm suggesting here, Mr. Chairman, and I want to be very, very clear about that. I think this bill does not impose a burden on a district if a district has the right, as it does under this bill as it's written, but as we could clarify, to refuse to participate. So I'm confused by not having heard in my office any opposition to this bill until I showed up at this meeting today, and that rather surprises me. So
thank you, Senator Begich. Is there any other, Senator Michicki?
Yeah, I actually don't like the way that process has gone either. The contact that I've had has been very recent. I support this program absolutely wholeheartedly. I'm trying to help the sponsor. Of course, I'm also a co-sponsor on getting this bill across the finish line in a way that doesn't drive additional costs for some districts. But Ms. Parity, as long as you're still on, it would be really helpful to understand what those districts look like, perhaps without complicating the bill dramatically. Either we make it an opt-in for some, or we have another way to move this forward that where we understand the kinds of districts that would be potentially negatively impacted. So I don't have a full understanding of what the district size, at what point it has potential negative impacts, and I'd like to understand that better. Is that, so you said six kids in CHEVAC, that's an extreme. And I know that I have a feeling Dr. Bishop is going to speak very highly of the program in a place that has tens of thousands of students. So there's probably somewhere in between where there's a line. I don't, can you help us with that a little bit? And if not, during this meeting, that's something we're going to need to know.
Quick clarification, were you directing that request for comments from Dr. Parity or Dr. Bishop?
Dr. Parity.
Dr. Parity, Director Parity, if you're still online, or did you want to comment on that?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, thank you for the question. And I appreciate that question because it is a matter of scale, and there is a point at which it would tip to adding additional costs. And I don't have that information but can collect it for the committee and provide that. Well, I can work with our members just to ask. The example I gave was an extreme, but I just wanted to give an example of what some of these folks who have testified might be speaking to. And for point of clarification, when I referred to Senator Begich, I was referring to the sentence that you offered, which seems like it would fully clarify the bill and the concerns that have been expressed. I will get that information, though, for you, Senator Michicki, and I'm happy to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, from who's offered comments. There's no more, no one else waiting on the phone. I see Dr. Bishop may be queued up. Dr. Bishop, did you want to comment?
Thank you, Chair Holland. And for the record, my name is Dr. Dina Bishop, and I'm the superintendent of the Anchorage School District. And I want to go on record that to say that this is an important bill. And for much too long in the state of Alaska with our education system, we have relied on what's called volunteerism, that if you want to do something, you can. While at the same time, our children are the lowest reading performers in the country. And just recently with the January 2021 Alaska Performance Scholarship Report, we're the lowest college-going, career, CTE, apprenticeship-going students as well. It is time that we change the trajectory of this with partnerships, not only among different sectors and different universities or different K-12 and university, but it's time that we as school districts learn to work together to make this come to fruition. This isn't an individualized, I have one child out there. We are very smart people who can figure out very intricate, complex problems. If we were charged, as this bill states, to figure out how all the children in Alaska could possibly be offered a dual credit program, I guarantee you there are smart people in the superintendency that can get together and figure this out. We can have cooperatives, co-ops. I presently am working with the Lower Yukon. We have a Lower Yukon student attending Alaska Middle College. Lower Yukon has offered the availability to support the rural Alaska, a pathway for other kids to join. I regret, too, that at the 11th hour on many of these most important bills to change what's happening in the education of our state, that we educators come out the loudest with the most pushback. Understanding this, you really have to look into it. The University of Alaska system has made it very affordable for K-12 districts to have dual credit. If a child goes individually, they may pay the full price of the tuition. But through these agreements, I want to share that the universities have offered MOUs to allow the jobs to be shared. The advising doesn't happen on the university side. Hence, we get a break on the tuition. A lot of the services that are charged within a tuition amount are not provided because the child isn't on site if you're doing dual credit online. Hence, the university creates a lower payment plan. These are very warranted because we don't get all the services, but our university has been very, very accommodating to these kids. And in fact, the kids are growing with the interest. I believe we can do this. It's been mentioned about, I worked in Metsu, I worked in Anchorage, and that we have economy of scale. That is true, but I want to let you know, it was a choice, and we went without other things that we used to be doing that didn't work for children to be able to offer this to kids. We are not successful as a K-12 institution if we do not prepare kids for life that happens afterwards, and that is to be life, college, and career ready. This bill ensures that our kids can have that opportunity. I promise this group, I will work my hardest to figure out plans and ways that we can make this work in all districts and offer whatever we can to partner in the cost. This is important to Alaska's children. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Dr. Bishop. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on SB 32 or any other comments from the committee? Senator Hughes.
A question for Dr. Bishop, and I know she led the charge in our area when this was set up, and like I said, it's a fantastic program. So the small district you worked with, you were able to work out the cost for that district so that it worked for them. Would the larger districts, you think, be able to do that for all the smaller districts and make it work where it would not be cost prohibitive? And do you have the sense, and I know you can't speak on behalf of the other urban districts, but do you have the sense in your conversations that there'd be a willingness to do the kind of partnerships you're talking about?
Through the chair to Senator Hughes, absolutely. And just to give an example, Anchorage is the, you know, the one, as I said before, the cost center for the BSA. Per student, I receive about a little over $10,000 with the adjusted ADM, even though the BSA is around $5,900. This school district that we work with receives over $20,000 per child. They claim their funds and only spend a small portion of that with the Anchorage School District flowing through to the university. So what that small school district can't offer for the supports, the wraparound services, the advising, things like that, we've taken that on in Anchorage to be able to do that for them, and then the university does their part with offering the courses. And so I believe all the different hubs really who have the economy at scale can help out our partner districts, because it is true they may only have one or two people that are interested, but those are one or two people that are valued kids in Alaska that should also have this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I see Paul Layer with the University of Alaska. We have him on the screen, and he'd like to make a comment. Please
thank
state
you,
your
Mr.
name
Chair,
and
for the record,
for the record.
Paul Layer.
Thank you.
Vice President for Academic Students and Research with the University of Alaska. As I testified last week, we support dual enrollment choices for students. We have over 30 different separate and memoranda of agreement with school districts around the state, large and small, to offer different kinds of middle college programs. Some of them are very face-to-face intensive, and such as we have with the Anchorage School District, and we have with the Matsu School District and Fairbanks and others. Some are more online, more virtual, more of a partnership with the district. And so as we have entered into the voluntary agreements that we have with district, we've worked with those districts to look at the cost model, to look at what works for them, what works for the students in particular. How do we provide that access for students around the state to have access to these dual enrollment choices? There's not one model that will work for Anchorage and Chibok. There's not one model that will work for the districts around the state. Each one is individual, each one is different, each one has different needs, and we respect that, and we respect the goal here, which is access for students and really preparing students for university, for careers, and that's really been our focus. And so we are willing to work with districts. It's been voluntary to date, and we want to expand that option to all students around the state, and however that can be done. Again, we've had dual enrollment options where the teacher in the school conducts the class and teaches, and the students receive credit, university credit for that. Those teachers meet our credentialing criteria. They also can use the material that works for them. We focus on the student learning outcomes in those classes. That's the most important thing. Do the students achieve university level competency in math, reading, writing, other programs across our system? And providing that access is really what we want to do. So I think if as we move forward, we will not have a single MOA or MOU with a district, with every district that will look the same. Everyone will be different. And again, the focus for us is really providing that access for students no matter where they are, and we will work with districts to make that work as well. Thank you very much for your time today and for the discussions on this bill.
Thank you, Vice President Layer. Question or comment from Senator Hughes?
Yes, I just want to preface this by saying, I had children in small districts, and if I still were in there, I would want my students to have access to this. So, Dr. Layer, listening to Dr. Bishop, she seemed to think that partnerships could be worked out, and she sounded pretty confident that any district that wanted to do this, things could be worked out so it would not be cost prohibitive. Do you agree? It sounds like the university was part of working those things out. Can you say that as a university you could be committed to working out some arrangement with any district, even a small district, even if it might mean you'd have to try to recruit an urban district to be part of that partnership? Are you committed to that kind of working through so that an agreement would be possible so that every high school student across the state that wanted to participate could?
Absolutely. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, absolutely. We will work with each of the districts. I was just in communication with our Alaska Advantage online middle college program chair, and I think that they have actually been in discussion with CHEVAC on how they might actually achieve that. In this kind of real-time conversation, and I need to get some details on this, but ultimately we are looking at reaching out to all of the districts to ask how we might be able to provide that access. And so whether it's a large district like Anchorage or a small district like CHEVAC, and whether we need to partner as we have between UAA, ASD, and other rural districts, I think that there's things we can do there. And so happy to work with the larger districts, happy to work with the smaller districts, and we are committed to making this work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Machicki?
Yeah, it's not related to this testifier. It's when we're through, I have a comment.
Okay. I see no more public testimony, no one interested in testifying. Is there any more discussion from the committee? I'm going to close public testimony and call a brief at ease. Back on the record, is there any further debate on Senate Bill 32?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
Yeah, thank you. I believe in this program. I don't co-sponsor many bills. I believe every kid in the state of Alaska deserves an opportunity to jumpstart their lives with early college, middle college, if you will. And if there are issues with this bill, it's got other committees to go through. It's got a whole other side that can look at these things. But in light of the fact that any issues were brought to us at the 11th hour, and we don't know exactly right now if we need any adjustment or not, the reality of it is we all support this program. We're going to let it go through the process, I hope. With that, I'd like to move Senate Bill 32, also known as 32-LS0307/A, be advanced from Senate Education with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
With no objection, SB 32 has been moved out of this committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We will now take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Senate Education Committee's back on the record. Next, we move to Senate Bill 36. We have a committee substitute for this bill. Senator Stevens, would you care to make the motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that work order 32-LS0312/B be adopted as a committee substitute for Senate Bill 36 and be placed before the committee as our working document.
I object for the purpose of discussion. Mr. King, please state your name and put yourself on the record and walk us through the explanation of changes.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ed King, staff to Senator Holland. The changes in the committee substitute effectively just changed the reporting requirement from twice a year to once every other year. The changes occur three times on page two. There's no changes to section one of the bill. On section two of the bill, in three places, there is the word semi-annual, which is replaced in the committee substitute with the word biannual. There are three additional conforming changes. In the original bill, the subparagraph B on line 32 of page 2 is no longer necessary and is therefore deleted, leaving only subparagraph A, which is then incorporated into paragraph 1. The other change is in paragraph 2, the word annually is no longer applicable and is removed, and the word both reports is replaced with the word the report. Those are the changes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. King. I remove my objection. Is there further objection to accepting the committee substitute as our working document? Seeing none, the committee substitute for SB 36 version B is now before the committee. Senator Stevens, do you have any further remarks or invited testimony on this bill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a great change amendment, and it makes sense. It aligns this reporting with existing reporting requirements like teacher preparation. And, you know, the reason for this, of course, is that we were all broadsided when we lost accreditation for the school teaching education department in Anchorage. And I think the legislature needs to be more aware of what's going on with the university. You know, I'd hope that we would never again face a loss of accreditation. But it's always possible. And it's good that we, even though it's every 2 years, that we have this report from the Board of Regents so we know what's going on. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. I will now open up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room wishing to offer public testimony? Seeing none, is there anyone online wishing to offer public testimony? Again, seeing none. I'm sorry. I see a hand up for Vice President Lehrer online if you'd like to offer some testimony on Senate Bill 36.
Again, thank you very much, Chair Holland. For the record, Paul Lehrer, Vice President for Academic Students and Research at the University of Alaska. I would like to just simply thank Senator Stevens and his staff for working with the university on changing the reporting timeline for this bill. The board does receive annual reports on our accreditation, and they are a matter of public record in the board records. But we do feel that reporting to the legislature on a biannual basis would fit in with our accreditation timeline, as I testified earlier. So I just wanted to say thank you for considering the university and our reporting requirements as you modified this bill into the version B that you are now discussing. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Lehrer. Senator Hughes.
Just a quick question on Dr. Lehrer. So your annual reports that you're doing anyway, do they include a report on how the campuses and programs are standing as far as accreditation? Is that part of the annual report that the regents are reviewing?
Through the chair, yes, Senator Hughes, that is what we are looking at. We report on where we are with our accreditation, not both our institutional accreditation as well as individual specialized accreditations that programs have. So we do have that report for the board prepared annually, and you know, as a result of some of the accreditation issues with their education programs, the board has asked for more information in those reports. So those reports are now a little more detailed than they were in the past, but we are providing that information to them. Thank
Excellent.
You.
Good to hear. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Lehrer. Is there anyone else wishing to testify? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Are there any amendments from the committee? Is there any further debate? And what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 36. I move that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 36, also known as 32-LS0312/B, be advanced from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no objections, it is so moved, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Senate Education Committee is back on the record. The next item on our calendar is Senate Bill 10 relating to college tuition for essential workers. This is the first hearing of this bill in the Senate Education Committee. My intent is to hear the bill, take public testimony, and then set the bill aside for further review. Senator Begich, would you like to offer opening remarks and introduce your staff?
Thank you. I will, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Tom Begich. I am the state senator for District J in downtown Anchorage, and again, I appreciate the committee's willingness to hear SB 10. I know that two of the members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, were able to hear a presentation on this bill in Senate Labor and Commerce, which passed out, was the first bill to pass a committee in this legislature. So with that, this bill is really our essential workers' thank you for the work that they have done over the last year. whether they delivered our groceries, took care of our young children, whether they picked us up from the airport or cleaned our offices or handled our mail, essential workers were the ones who made the ultimate sacrifice, sometimes at great risk to themselves and their loved ones. A recent study that published by the Occupational Environmental Medicine Journal reported that over 20% of grocery store employees tested positive for COVID-19. Of that 20%, 95% of them reported getting it from contact with through their jobs. That is precisely why we have this bill before us. The bill, besides being good policy, is also a thank you to those workers. Those workers who put their lives on the line for each and every one of us. During COVID, everyone fell behind. And we learn more about the long road ahead. It is clear we are in a wildly uneven recovery. So this is a bill about giving those essential workers a hand up after the dust settles. For those who are at the Labor and Commerce Committee hearing, I would remind them about a particular graphic put up by the Department of Labor, which showed that a year later, we're still 25% down in employing our lowest income labor force, while the labor market for those who are making the income we do, Mr. Chairman, are actually 1% up a year later. So with that in mind, department data shows that higher education attainment actually equates to higher weekly earnings. A recent University of Alaska workforce report, which you'll hear more about in just a moment, states that median income earnings for those with just a high school diploma is about $35,000 in our state, while those with a bachelor's degree earn on average $57,000 a year. Education matters, and this bill is a pathway to education for those that choose to take it. The same report states that 96.3% of working graduates are Alaska residents. Going to school in Alaska keeps you in Alaska. By providing a path for essential workers to earn a post-secondary education in Alaska, we will stop the attrition of Alaska's future. In a moment, my staffer, Luki Gail Tobin, will read the sectional, but please allow me to make some clarifications in advance. As was stated in the Labor and Commerce Committee meeting, we have some changes that we will work with your staff on to ensure that we have a working committee substitute that will reflect the intent of the bill. First, we're going to make sure that it includes all of those essential workers identified in the handout that's in your packet, a document entitled Alaska Essential Services and Critical Workforce Infrastructure. That came from a lot of commentary to us in the bill, includes those who worked in the front line in the nonprofit sector, like Beans Cafe, for those who are aware of that service, our homeless shelters, those folks, as well as our postal workers. All of this came up in testimony. After a review of the legislation with the executive director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, we recognize that although the bill is meant to permit attendance at any state-supported postsecondary education institution for a student who has not yet received an undergraduate degree, there's some phrasing that we have to fix. It's very minor, but it's just to clarify it and make that intent clear. And finally, we have had some good discussions regarding the program's start and end dates. And as they're tied to, right now they're tied to the expiration of the federal emergency declaration, I plan to provide an amendment that permits interested parties to apply for consideration until the end of this year and then repeal the entire program by 2025, giving them 4 years within which to actively participate in it. One last thing I'll add before I turn it over to Ms. Tobin is that in the state of Michigan, where they've enacted this program, they actually used CARES Act money to fund it because it is absolutely connected to the CARES Act itself. With the substantial $1.1 billion coming into the state, I'm certain at the Finance Committee they'll be able to redirect some of that resource, which our fiscal note shows would not exceed $10 million at the most over the entire period of the grants program through CARES Act money. With that, I turn it over, Mr. Chairman, to my staff, the legislative assistant, Luki Tobin, who will go through a very brief sectional reading.
Ms. Tobin, please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your presentation.
For the record, my name is Luki Gail Tobin, staff to Senator Begich. I'll be walking you through a sectional analysis of the free tuition for essential workers, version B. So section one establishes an essential worker grant program as new uncodified law of the state of Alaska. Section 1 also directs the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to establish a tuition grant program for essential workers. Eligible essential workers must be Alaskan residents and must be employed at the start or during the declared federal public health emergency as of January 31st, 2020. Section 1 also includes a listing of occupations that qualify as essential for the purpose of this grant program. As Senator Begich mentioned this in his opening remarks, this listing of occupations outlined in Section 1 is incomplete, and he will be recommending an amendment to the section. Section 1 provides eligibility requirements for essential workers, including employment status, post-secondary enrollment status, residency status, proof of high school diploma or equivalency completion, and requires the grant program applicant to have completed a free application for federal student aid or FAFSA. Section 1 also includes language on how the grant recipient will maintain program eligibility, which includes maintaining a 2.0 grade point minimum, making satisfactory progress in their program, and maintaining their enrollment status. Finally, Section 1 authorizes the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to establish policies and procedures for grant program application and admission and evaluate the program efficacy. Section 2 establishes an essential worker grant program report as new uncodified law of the state of Alaska and directs the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to submit a report to the Alaska legislature on or before December 31st. Section 3 repeals Section 1 on the date of expiration or cancellation of the declaration of a federal public health emergency. As previously mentioned by the bill sponsor, there will be a recommendation for amendment to this section. And Section 4 sets a repeal date of January 1st, 2025 for Section 2, the Essential Worker Grant Program as operated by the Alaska Commission for Post-Secondary Education. This concludes the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Tobin. With that completed, we'll move on to invited testimony.
Yes, please.
And I see we have Terry Cothran with the University of Alaska Associate Vice President for Workforce Development. And Vice President Cothran, if you please state your name and affiliation for the record, and I believe we have a presentation here that we're going to walk through with you.
For the record, my name is Terry Cothran, Associate Vice President of Workforce Development for the University of Alaska. And Chair Holland, would you prefer me to share my presentation, or will staff move the slides forward?
We have the slides in front of us right now, so we're viewing it ourselves, and I believe we'll be moving it forward.
Thank you, Chair Holland, and members of the committee, for the opportunity to talk with you about how the university is positioned to reskill Alaskans who need a new career path and upskill those who want to advance their careers. With legislation such as SB 10, we can train more Alaskans and support Alaska's economic recovery. This morning, I'm going to provide a brief overview of the University of Alaska and how training Alaskans' workforce is a critical part of our mission, the value of post-secondary education that Senator Begich referenced, and the employment outcomes of nearly 18,000 University of Alaska graduates across 9 key industries that are important to Alaska's economy. Next slide, please. The University of Alaska is Alaska's system of higher education and includes 3 separately accredited universities that have distinct missions and are also responsible for serving the community college mission through 13 community campuses. All combined, it is the most comprehensive workforce provider in the state. Next slide. Growing a strong workforce is at the core of the university's mission and one of the Board of Regents' 5 strategic goals. The University of Alaska's breadth of programs range from short-term career and technical education certificates to associate degrees and all the way through doctorate degrees, with many of these programs available statewide. You'll see in the data I'm going to share with you today how these programs are contributing to the workforce needs across key industries and to Alaska's economy. Next slide. These median earnings data are from research and analysis at the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and make it abundantly clear the economic value of training and education. You can see the impact on earning potential as education increases. The data also shows that more education and training correlates strongly with lower unemployment rates, and this has been specifically highlighted during the pandemic. In the labor market analysis we recently completed of high-demand occupations show that careers are and will continue to require advanced skills, greater knowledge, and more flexibility than ever before. Next slide. Through a recent project, we strengthened our partnership with research and analysis at the Department of Labor to demonstrate graduate outcomes across key Alaska industries that resulted in the development of 9 workforce reports representing construction, health, IT, oil and gas, to name a few. Next slide. Here's an example of one of the reports. Each report highlights graduate outcomes across 3 key program areas that are important to that industry, the industries where graduates work, their average wages at 1 and 5 years post-graduation, how training Alaskans boosts the Alaska hire rate and residency rates, what the hiring trends are of the industry being featured.
I believe we temporarily lost your signal. Vice President Cochran, if you're still out there, we may have to move on to the next presenter. We'll give her a little bit more time to come back. Chad Hutchinson?
If Chair Holland, I can tell work series if you have a telephone number to call in.
Thank you. So we'll set this aside for right now. Take a brief at ease. On, I believe it's slide 6. And Joelle Hall, President of the FL-CIO, thank you for being available on short notice. if you'd state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony on Senate Bill 10.
Thank you, Chair Holland and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joelle Hall, and I'm here today on behalf of the Alaska AFL-CIO. The Alaska AFL-CIO represents 60,000 workers in a variety of fields, and I'm very proud to say that many of our members have answered the call and have been working very hard during this pandemic. First responders, hospital personnel, state employees, grocery store workers, and many more have worked under difficult conditions, allowing many of us to hunker down. While we represent many types of frontline workers, there are many who do not yet benefit from a collective bargaining agreement. Childcare workers, some delivery drivers, personal care attendants, to name a few. Important jobs that make the gears of our economy turn. We've learned a lot during this pandemic, and I hope one thing sticks in our collective hearts and memories. Without childcare and grocery store workers, we're all in deep trouble. I want to thank Senator Begich for introducing this bill. As we stated earlier, this pandemic has resulted in huge job losses. As a community, we are going to need everything we can do to get Alaskans back to work. One way to make a big difference is training, as has been stated all along. Providing training and opportunities to a better way of life for our families is the cornerstone of the work that the labor movement does. A market economy is always enhanced when workers are afforded easy access to affordable training. This bill would reward many who have given so much with a gift that helps them and their families. But as was noted in the sponsor statement, better trained workers also help employers as well. So this bill seems to be a win-win for workers and their current or future employees. This is a good idea that will help so many who have given so much. We're in full support of this bill and its passage. I wanted just to mention that we did have a conversation, Senator Begich and I did, about apprenticeship, and I wanted to make sure that folks on the committee understand that the apprenticeship systems that we are involved in are free of charge already to the student. So Alaska's union apprenticeships are free of charge. But we would look forward to expanding those training opportunities. In order to do that, our supply and demand system is, of course, based on work. So if there's infrastructure bills or geo bond bills, we also stand ready to expand up our training modules and our training systems in the construction industry to rapidly respond to the free market demand for those workers. So if you invest in geo bonds or infrastructure, that allows an uptake of these workers into things like the apprenticeship systems, whether they are union or non-union. and putting more workers trained into the workforce, which is often considered a graying workforce. The Alaska construction trades are considered a graying workforce and allows us to keep our workers here instead of rolling out to other states where they could be working as what we call travelers. So thank you very much for your time today. This is a great bill. I really hope it passes. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, President Hall. I see we have Vice President Cochran back on the line. And we were on slide six. You had kind of moved into it, but if you just want to start over with your presentation on slide six.
Certainly, Chair Holden. Thank you for working with the technical difficulties. Hopefully, my computer will hold steady. So starting with slide six, here's an example of one of the reports. Each of the reports highlights graduate outcomes across three key program areas that are important to that industry. The industries where graduates work, their average wages at 1 and 5 years post-graduation, how training Alaskans boosts the Alaska hire rate and residency rates, what the hiring trends are of the industry being featured, and where graduates work across Alaska's six economic regions. Each report also includes all of the programs related to the largest and fastest growing occupations that require post-secondary education and their graduate outcomes. Next slide. I'll walk through the combined employment outcomes of the nearly 18,000 graduates from the 9 UA workforce reports. And here are the various industry sectors our first-year graduates are employed in. With healthcare projected to grow at twice the rate of the economy overall and total over 54,000 jobs by 2028, it's not a surprise that nearly 24% of our graduates work in the healthcare industry. Educational services include secondary and post-secondary teachers, as well as graduates from programs that support many industry sectors, such as IT, accounting, and human resources. And of course, there are graduates in mining and oil and gas, as well as graduates in the other industries category that support many industries, such as transportation and construction. Next slide. As a state, we are fortunate to have access to some of the best employment data in the country through research and analysis at the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. The wage data in these workforce reports represent actual wages earned of university graduates who work and live in Alaska.
Oh, we lost you again.
Thank you, Vice President Cochran. We've frozen up again. Okay, if you can get her back online.
And I would just like to, may I, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In an effort to keep this moving until we're done, the data that she has provided, I think, is worth us looking at. I had no idea until she presented the data to my office how detailed we are able to drill down now in the university's structure. And that has actually driven our desire to see the bill move, because what you're seeing is that when we can actually get folks into these jobs, they become fully functional participants in our system. And I think that's what her issue her presentation is underscoring, how many of these Alaskans improve their income level, how many of these Alaskans improve their contribution to the state, and how many of Alaskans are able to essentially become productive citizens. So I think that's a critical component of the presentation.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Hughes?
I won't make this comment at this meeting if she's ready to come back online, but I will just say I love the idea of someone furthering their education to lift themselves into a better position. That's what my husband and I did years ago. We were technically under the poverty level, and by getting an education, we pulled ourselves up. So I'm for that. My philosophical question, and I'll admit is a problem with this, is that there were people in the state that were unemployed, restaurant workers, people that were not in that category of essential, that I feel like I would like them to have an opportunity. These essential workers were able to continue working and earning a wage, where you have many people that had to close small businesses and could not go to work and got hit pretty hard. So giving this opportunity to this group, it kind of seems opposite of where the need is. So I'll just make that comment.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Senator Begich.
Thank you for those comments through the chair to Senator Hughes. One of the things about the bill is it actually does try to provide that opportunity for those who are on the front line who may have lost their jobs because of the pandemic crisis. So that's the intent in the amendment, is to cover exactly those workers that you've described, so that if you were unfortunate enough to lose your job during that time period because of the pandemic, you would also be eligible potentially for this grants program. And that is part of the plan at this point, because you would have qualified as an essential worker at least at some portion before you lost your job. So those jobs weren't lost immediately.
Senator Hughes?
And follow up. So my understanding is that some of the jobs, though, that were lost, and the people that couldn't go to work were not, they don't meet the definition of essential workers, so they would not qualify for this. Am I misunderstanding that?
Mr. Chairman, sorry.
Senator Begich.
I'm not sure. I think I can look into that and find an answer for you that would satisfy both you and me. So.
And I'll just add, that's my concern on this, that essential worker, I thought, would be people who are guaranteed employment through the pandemic because they're essential workers. Mm-hmm. So my concern is that these are the people who haven't missed a paycheck, but literally we have people who are, you know, shut down businesses or out on the streets. But moving on, we do not have Vice President Cochran online again. Okay. We'll take a brief at ease. Record, and we're going to open up to public testimony. And I see, I'll apologize, looks like Panu Lucier with Thread in Anchorage. If I have that correct, if you'd please state your name and affiliation and begin your public testimony.
I am the director of the Alaska System for Early Education Development, also known as SEED, S-E-E-D. SEED is housed and managed at FRED, Alaska Child Care Resource and Referral Network. And thank you for this opportunity to testify, and thank you to Senator Begich for sponsoring this bill. SEED is Alaska's statewide professional development system for the early childhood and school-age workforce. Part of SEED is the Alaska SEED Registry, a membership-based information system that recognizes, promotes, and tracks individual professional development achievements on the SEED career ladder. In Alaska and across our nation, early childhood teachers have remained in the lower income bracket. And in Alaska, the median wage for childcare workers is $13.21 an hour. Many early childhood educators have families of their own and struggle to make ends meet and don't have extra money for training or higher education tuition. We have heard from our workforce that many work two jobs just to make ends meet. The COVID-19 pandemic has shed light on just how essential childcare is to working families. Alaska early educators have been on the front line as essential workers throughout the pandemic. SB10 would provide much needed assistance with free or reduced tuition, and I encourage the Senate Education Committee to pass SB10. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lucier. We're going to hear from Vice President Cochran. If you are online, I'll just caution you, we'll probably run towards the end of the meeting. If you'd more think about closing comments or wrapping up your presentation, please once again state your name and affiliation and begin your statements.
Thank you, Chair Holland. My name is Terry Cochran. I'm an Associate Vice President of the University of Alaska. And if I understand correctly, I can just close out with my final few slides, starting on slide 8.
That'd be fine.
Thank you. I mentioned as a state how fortunate we are to have rich employment data, thanks to the Research and Analysis Department. Office of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and the data in these workforce reports reflects actual wages earned by university graduates. This particular graph represents wage outcomes earned over a 10-year period of the nearly 18,000 graduates across different levels of certificates and degrees. You can see, as mentioned earlier, more education and training correlates strongly with greater earning potential. The average first-year wages of these graduates is more than $50,000, and the fifth-year wages exceed the average Alaska wage by nearly $10,000. Next slide. The data shows that graduates working in Alaska are Alaska residents at a much higher rate compared to Alaska's overall workforce. A 17-point percentage difference is rather significant and another powerful message of the importance of training Alaskans for jobs in Alaska. While the percentages vary across the 9 workforce reports, in every case, the residency rate is higher for university graduates compared to the residency rate of all workers within each industry sector. Next slide. As I shared in the beginning, the University of Alaska is Alaska's system of higher education and includes campuses in every region of the state who are training and graduating Alaskans each year to help meet the high demand and regional workforce needs of all Alaska's 6 economic regions as represented here. And last slide. In conclusion, the University of Alaska supports SB 10 to help remove a potential barrier for essential workers by providing tuition and fees to obtain a post-secondary credential and the skills to re-enter the workforce or obtain new skills to advance in their careers. We stand ready to provide training and education to those who would qualify through this grant program and support Alaska's economic recovery. Next slide. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak with you today and for your patience with the technical difficulties.
Thank you, Vice President Cothran. I will now say, I'm sorry.
Just a very quick comment. I did want to point out on page 2, line 1 of the bill, it does say it was temporarily or permanently laid off as one of the conditions. I should have mentioned that. I missed it. My staff caught it.
Thank you. With no other comments about SB 10, I did open public testimony. I'll close public testimony on that. And I'll now set SB 10 aside for additional work. Our next meeting is Friday, March 19th at 9 a.m. Any other business for the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned at 10:33.